ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut, it's Supercuts.
Luke Brock was the symbol of great base stealing, but today I'm the greatest of all time. Thank you.
That is the voice of Hall of Famer Ricky Henderson on May 1st, 1991, in all of his splendor. He has just broken Lou Brock's record for career stolen bases. And Howard Bryant, when you hear those words from Ricky today, what comes to mind, man?
Well, I think two things immediately come to mind. The first is the hilarity of the moment. Because when he said, "I am the greatest of all time," his own teammates were in the dugout. Dave Henderson and Willie Wilson and Connie Lansford, they were all looking at each other and they said, did he really just say that? I am the greatest today. I am the greatest. Did he just say that with Lou Brock 5 feet from him?
Yes.
That's the hilarity of it. But the bigger picture piece of it is, wow. Ricky Henderson obliterated the record books. I mean, when you think about all-time records, you gotta be an old man to break those records. When you're Barry Bonds, you're in your 40s. When you're Hank Aaron, to break Babe Ruth's record, it's a 40-year-old Hank Aaron trudging around the bases. When you see Pete Rose breaking the all-time record, he's 40 years old. Ricky was 32 to break an all-time record and still play for 10 more years. I mean, it doesn't happen.
Ricky goes, a pitch ticket, he's going to have it. He does. Ricky Henderson, no contest, steals third base, jerks the bag from its moorings, and holds it aloft, representing number 939.
So what should the kids out there, Howard, who don't know the legend, what should they know about Ricky?
Well, I think the first thing that you need to know about Ricky is he's a true, absolute showman.
Mr. October, meet Mr. Grand Theft Base of 1982. He's Ricky Henley Henderson.
One of the great originals. And I think when people think about baseball now, the whole damn sport has been marketed through math. It's like a trig test, right? this was the launch angle, and this was the hard hit rate. And this Ricky was just pure theater.
But some American leaguers call him a hot dog. Well, if he is, he's too quick for mustard. But there's one thing for sure. He can sure relish being the best base burglar in all of baseball.
Pure theater, pure personality. Everything he did, he was the must-watch guy. He reminded me a lot of Bonds during the home run chase, where no matter what you were doing, when he was up, you did not go to the concessions. You did not go to the bathroom. You did not go get the phone or go into the kitchen. You watched what he was doing at all times.
Your exit velocity when he was at bat was zero.
Exactly. Right? He harkens you back to the era when you were copying batting stances. People just, the kids who watched him play wanted to be like him. It's no different than watching Otani right now or watching somebody who is so electric that you look at what they do and there's just something kinetic about them.
That one, a towering fly ball to left field. It is deep. It is back. He's repaid him a three-run homer.
Yep, grab the shirt. Yep. Style.
Style, Ricky.
I care about showstoppers. I mean, it's one thing to put up the big numbers. Albert Pujols puts up huge numbers. Look at his career, huge numbers. I could not care less about Albert Pujols as a player. I'm sorry. I just have to admit it, you know. But he puts up huge numbers, but that doesn't make you a superstar. It makes you a star,
yeah,
but it doesn't make you a superstar. Superstars are the ones who put up the big numbers, and we want to just watch everything they do, and we want to be like them. And Ricky was all of those things.
Superstar is one of those terms that we throw around so often now that it's basically lost all meaning. Its real definition, like the concept of beauty, I suppose, is basically in the eye of the beholder. But you should know this. For three decades, America could not stop beholding Ricky Henderson. Whether you wanted to watch him like a TV show or audit him like an accountant. No less than Bill James, the godfather of sabermetrics, once said that if you split Ricky Henderson in two, you'd have two Hall of Famers. Both of whom, I now imagine, would still wear sunglasses and dive headfirst and talk in the third person. So, today, the man who wrote the book on Ricky, Howard Bryant, tells us about a player who was ahead of his time, even though his time spanned a literal quarter century. And he explains how so many of us got Ricky wrong. I'm Pablo Torre. It is Tuesday, June 7th. This is ESPN Daily.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So, Howard Bryant, your book is titled Ricky, : The Life and Legend of an American Original. It is out now. And I want to take you for a second here back to the Oakland Tribune in 91. Right? Because this is how you started. You were born into this story. You witnessed Ricky up close for many years. This was his second stint with the Athletics at this point. But like, what made you? When did you know you wanted to write a book about Ricky Henderson?
It's a good question. It actually goes back to 2014, an amazing, crazy night where at the Smithsonian and at the we're in DC, it's Hank Aaron's 80th birthday. So there's this massive Henry Aaron 80th birthday celebration at the Smithsonian. They're unveiling his portrait at the National Portrait Gallery. Henry Aaron and I are going to sit on stage and we're going to go talk in front of 600 people. It was incredible. And they invited a bunch of Hall of Famers there, and Ricky was one of them. And at one point after one of the galas, one of the events, Ricky's wife, Pamela, came over to me and said, I want you to do for my husband what you did for Henry Aaron. And I hadn't thought about Ricky necessarily as a biography subject. And then over the years in 2014, 2015, it starts hitting, maybe this is the next guy. Because we've been having these conversations in baseball for years. Who can carry a biography? One, because they were an electric, fun player. You want to hear about them and care about their lives. The other thing that had me really wanting to write this book is because I just felt like Ricky was a man out of time. How many people can we talk about who absolutely obliterated the record book? I mean, destroyed it. And yet, when we think about Ricky, we think about all the Ricky stories and Ricky in the third person and Ricky this and is this story true and is this apocryphal? Did Ricky Henderson really put, you know, frame
yes
a bonus check without cashing it? Right? Let's go find out if these stories are actually true. And so there was a piece of this American story that I really, really liked. This idea that if you are old enough and you go back to when Ricky was playing, people hated Ricky. They hated him. He was arrogant. He showed you up. He was a hot dog, that phrase they used to use all the time. He was too flashy. He was all of those things. He was greedy. He didn't play, you know, unless he wanted to play. And then when you look at Ricky now, there's a totally different arc. Now people compare him. He's like this combination of Yogi Berra and Satchel Paige, and they want to tell these grandfatherly stories of how hilarious Ricky was. And so I wanted to really examine that sort of arc and how if you stay around long enough, you may stay the same, but the world changes around you, and then people begin to appreciate you more.
Yeah, you mentioned all of these stories, Howard, and it feels telling that even the story of Ricky's birth sounds like the kind of tall tale that requires fact-checking.
That's the other thing, right? Were you really born in a car, Ricky? Right? I mean, were you really born in a car on Christmas Day? And the stories are true. And it's like, he's one of those characters where things just, you have to find out if they actually are happening. Are they really, is this true? He's just such a fantastic character. And we don't have a lot of those. Like, baseball people today go out of their way to be impossibly boring. They're trying not to be interesting. And he can't help but be interesting.
What was Ricky like as a young athlete?
Well, what's hilarious about it was when Ricky was born in Chicago and then moved back with his mother to Pine Bluff, Arkansas. And when he gets to Oakland, Oakland already is a legendary city. You had Frank Robinson, Veda Pinson, and Curt Flood all on the same high school team, all in the same outfield. And Bill Russell and Frank Robinson were on the basketball team.
Oh, my God.
There are so many Oakland guys who are already in the big leagues. So to be a good player in Oakland, you know, I love the way those guys brag about it. Really wasn't that special. As kids, I said to Ricky, I said, when did you realize you had world-class talent? He's like, I don't know, about seventh grade. Okay. You know, and so for that group, they saw Curt Flood in the big leagues. So they're like, well, if Curt could do it, I can do it. Curt lived around the corner. Curt went to the same schools that we went to. And if Frank can do it, I can do it. And so Ricky shows up and he's just a machine. You know, the number of times you talk to Ricky and you realize he's really not bragging. I mean, he's bragging, but you look at him and he goes, I was born to do this. he's not telling you a tale. He's actually just telling you at every single level, whenever I played, nobody could beat me. I mean, there's a story, Pablo, that I absolutely love about this, is that there's a story, and I didn't know if it was true or not. Turns out it was true, that Ricky worked on his speed by racing the school bus.
Wait.
Instead of getting on the school bus, Ricky would just run side by side with the bus. See if I could, you know, beat the bus to the next stop.
And your reporting has verified this tale.
Yes. His future wife would watch it. Where's he going? Racing the bus. Right? I mean, and so he's one of those special guys.
But as special as Ricky is, and he is supremely confident also coming out of this absurd baseball hotbed, he also gets overlooked, Howard, in the beginning because he's short.
Whenever I work on a book, Pablo, I'm always thinking, especially with the main subject, I always view it like a locomotive, a coal engine. You know, you take take the shovel and you pour the coal into the engine, you shovel it in there. And my question, whether we're talking about Henry Aaron or whomever else, was, what is that coal made of? And so for Ricky, what is that coal made of? That coal was always feeling underestimated. And in Ricky's case, underpaid. From a very early age, he recognized his worth through money. And you pay for the things that you value.
And you said, there's like 40 guys now suddenly that are getting more money than I am. How did that affect you in terms of your play on the field?
I don't think it had a big part of me playing on the field. I think it had a big part of me, my pride, I guess, on thinking about all the players that are ahead of you, what type of player they are, what they do for their club, and what you do for your club, and why they getting paid much more dollars than you, and you do the same thing or better.
And this is also one of the reasons why he would become one of the more hated players during that time.
Yeah.
We'll get to that in a sec, I'm sure. But when you're talking about his development, he really went into the minor leagues with people just not believing in what he was going to do. He's a fourth round pick. And the three picks ahead of him, the A's picks, none of them ever even made the majors. And Ricky wanted $100,000 signing bonus. He got $10,000. And so all of this sort of led to him being very much aware of what his worth was. And he was not going to allow anyone to tell him what he couldn't do. Just constantly go out there and prove it.
But his persona, Howard, when does that begin to manifest? When do you get to see the signs that his personality is going to be singular?
Yeah, I think it's in the minor leagues. I think it's Double A Modesto. And that's when he's stealing bases left and right. He steals 7 bases in a game. He's just tearing the league apart. In fact, Charlie Finley, the owner of the A's, notoriously cheap Charlie Finley, legendarily inventive, had Ricky race a quarter horse in the minor leagues. He goes from racing the school bus to racing a quarter horse. But he's tearing the league apart. Not only is he tearing the league apart, but now you're starting to see the Ricky style and the way he steals bases, the way he moves in the plate. There's just a little extra with his game. They teach you to catch the ball with 2 hands. Ricky catches the ball and then does a little electric slide after catching the ball. Right? It's the little things that begin to add up to this signature sort of athletic character.
A character, incidentally, who loved to talk about himself as if he was not himself in the third person.
We try to take 70% of Ricky out there and play the way that 70% Ricky would play, and it didn't look like Ricky, so I think some of them felt that, you know, I wasn't hustling, but I was giving you 70%. So.
When did that guy show up?
I think it was Modesto. Ricky starts talking to himself and people are realizing, who's he talking to? So the catcher and the pitcher, David Cohen, told me this story. I thought he was trash talking me. Turns out he was talking to himself. Dave Stewart will say, Ricky always did that. It's just that he said to do it at a little bit louder volume so everybody else could hear him. But Ricky had been speaking about himself in the third person and talking to himself to motivate himself since he was 8 or 9 years old.
I want to take us to 1980 now, Howard, because Billy Martin, the Yankees manager, the legend himself, originally, by the way, from Berkeley, California, he comes back home to coach the A's. And before Billy Martin comes in, right, the A's are terrible. They're about to be sold, it's looking like. But he turns them around in 1980. But there was this one giant problem, which is that Billy Martin could not earn the trust of Ricky Henderson. And why was that?
Because Ricky didn't trust anybody. Ricky had a mantra, I cannot get close to a manager. I can't do it because if they bench me or if they trade me, I'm going to kill them. Right? He just did not want to get, and it actually makes perfect sense. You can't, who hangs out with the boss? However, Billy realized what he had in Ricky. And Billy is one of the only managers, which is why Billy was Ricky's favorite manager. Was the only guy that Ricky really played for who saw beyond all the histrionics and saw beyond Ricky's personality and all the quirks and everything else and said, I'm just going to let this guy play because the way he plays fits exactly how I want the game to be played. Aggressive, in your face, bombastic, let's go. And in 1980, this is Ricky's first full season in the big leagues, steals 100 bases. And Ricky wanted to run whenever he wanted to, and Billy says, I'm going to tell you when to run. So Ricky really wants the green light. So here's this battle between manager and player. On the one hand, Ricky feels stifled, but on the other hand, you got Billy going, listen, it worked. Look, you stole 100 bases. You're having, but Ricky's attitude is, I'm the one who stole those bases. So,
and Ricky, by the way, at this point, is 21 years old.
Is 21 years old. Total control and understanding of his ability, which drives everybody crazy. Ricky and Billy had a relationship that brought out the best in Ricky. And of course, Billy played total favorites with Ricky.
Well, they partied together.
And they partied together, exactly.
What a scene, just what a mental image. Ricky Henderson in his early 20s and Billy Martin out on the town.
You know, Billy Martin teaching you the ropes? And so when I was interviewing Ricky, it was hilarious the number of times he goes, I can't even remember the number of times I witnessed Billy getting his butt whipped. And Billy would always get into fights. Billy had short man's complex. And Billy would like fight and Ricky would like watch Billy pick fight. Watch Billy get punched in the face. And so that really did begin that relationship that lasted until the end of Billy's life.
So we get to 1982 now, Howard, because Ricky enters this year just wanting, more than anything else, right, to break Lou Brock's single-season record for stolen bases. It's 118. And that's obviously, for people who don't know, that's absurd. It's absurd to aspire to more than 118 steals. And it seems like Billy was his co-conspirator in making this record fall.
Absolutely. And he saw Ricky. Ricky's my guy. Ricky is the engine for this whole thing. Ricky steals 100 bases in 1980, 81 because of the strike, he gets 56, but he probably would have stole 100 that year as well. 82, he comes to Ricky and says, we're going to break the record this year. And Ricky's like, what do you mean we?
The tip-off to Ricky Henderson's abilities came in his rookie season when he stole 100 bases. The way he's going in 82, Henderson could be close to 140 thefts before it's all over.
He stole 130 bases.
Jeez.
And jammed his shoulder in mid September. He could have had 140 bases. I mean, Ricky was out stealing whole teams. I mean, today it takes 2 years for a whole team to steal 130
yep.
bases.
Yep.
Maybe three.
Ricky Henderson's quest to surpass Lou Brock's single season record of 118 stolen bases has been front page news here. And now it's marketing major league style. There's Ricky Henderson t-shirts, Ricky Henderson buttons, and now a Ricky Henderson poster designed by Norman Seif, who normally creates album covers for rock superstars.
He's doing things that today's baseball fans just cannot comprehend. And I think the other thing, too, at the end of the day, while all this is happening, is Ricky's like a taxi cab, right? The meter's running. So while he's doing these things, he's also looking around the game and realizing, I'm underpaid. I want my money. I mean, Ricky is essentially the Goodfellas line, you pay me. I mean, that's Ricky.
Which is why, like, I'm so fascinated by how Ricky felt about this perception that you're describing, right? The not just a lack of wanting to understand sort of like the nuances of the story, but just the allegation that this is a guy who's all about me, that he's about personal records. He wants to get paid more. He doesn't really care about the team. How did Ricky feel about all of that?
Well, Ricky epitomized this as, you know, well, hey, I'm helping my team by scoring runs. Ricky actually cared about the all-time runs record more than he cared about the all-time stolen base record, because to him, stolen bases were simply a means to the end, which is to get around the bases, to score runs.
I think the most important thing is a game for a leadoff hitter is to score and run. And I think I cherish the scoring runs probably a little more than I do stealing bases. I use stealing bases to score runs.
How valuable am I? How can you call me selfish if we're up 1-0 whenever I come up? At the end of the inning, we're up 1-0. For him, he was very much aware of his value. And he also saw America for what America values most, which is money. He's like, this is, you know, he never said it this way, but his point was, all everybody cares about is money. Why am I the greedy one? Everything around here is based on money.
Yes, I believe I deserve more money than I. The Oakland A's to me right now somehow might not feel that way. You know, as we say, you get an investment and sometimes you get an outstanding investment, sometimes you just break off even. I have to think about Ricky Henderson.
On the one hand, Ricky, as a rookie in 79, was making $17,500. By 1982, he was making $535,000. So, a huge leap. But Ricky wanted $1 million. During those years, the dollar amounts were skyrocketing, and the public just could not fathom how these guys were making that much money to play what they would call a kid's game.
But speaking of making that much money, Howard, after the break, I need you to give me the truth behind the most famous Ricky Henderson story of all.
Passion, drive, and patience.
The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Howard, the dynamic that Rickey Henderson has with money, like, you hear all of that and you're like, well, I've already developed a mental image of somebody who is living luxuriously. That is him. But the reality of that is also not exactly what you might think.
No, Rickey was cheap. I mean, Rickey had a reputation. They used to say Rickey was tight. As Bobby Aleo, the A's athletic trainer, once told me, the only time Rickey let go of a dollar was to get a better grip. I'm not letting go of this. I'm just trying to get a better grip.
And the preeminent legend along those lines, by the way, a legend which also needs to be fact-checked with you here, it has to do with an actual physical check.
So the story is that Rickey framed his check without cashing it. It was a bonus check. It was for nearly $1 million. And of course, that story sounds apocryphal. It's 100% true. Here's what happened. Rickey received a bonus check. I believe it was in 1981. And it was his first big bonus check. And he was so proud of it. What happened was... the Oakland A's accounting office, their books were off $1 million. And people were just panicking. They were losing it. They're like, oh my God, we're all getting fired. So they had to track down where's the missing money? Where is the hole in the accounting? And it turns out that Rickey Henderson never cashed his check. And so his best friend, Fred Atkins, walks over and says, Rickey, where's the check? And Rickey said, it's on the wall.
It's sort of so sweetly innocent. It's almost kind of, I mean, it's kind of like those restaurants that frame the first dollar that they take in.
Exactly. Put the first dollar up on the wall behind the bar. But what's really endearing about it to me too is when you come from nothing, you know, Rickey wasn't rich. Rickey came from, you know, I wouldn't say super impoverished, but they didn't have any money. I mean, everybody was poor. I mean, Rickey started playing baseball because his eighth grade guidance counselor offered him a quarter for every stolen base. And so this was a way to get lunch money. And so to be able to be handed a check for $1 million, it's got to be completely surreal, no matter how much belief in your ability you have. And so for him, this was also a recognition that this doesn't come easy and I don't take this for granted and I care about this. And so, yeah, the story is true and everybody likes to make fun of it, but there's also some sort of pragmatism behind it as well.
And it also drives home this notion, Howard, that money was less about greed for Ricky than it was simply the method he used to keep score. And so in 1984, the A's, they realized they're not going to be able to afford Ricky Henderson, right? Howard, he was a four-time All-Star, but he was also going to be a free agent after that season. And so they end up trading him to the Yankees, who can't afford him, where he joins Don Mattingly and Dave Winfield and Ron Guidry. But those Yankees, they never once make the postseason in Ricky's ultimately 4.5 years in New York.
And with that comes the reputation that Ricky's not a winner.
That's right. That's right.
That he's a loser. He's a selfish guy who's only into Ricky. And now Ricky is starting to realize during this time period, I need to win. I'm a winner. Winner. The, you know, breaking records is fine, but I got to win.
So here is the man of the moment, Ricky Henderson, back in the Oakland uniform. Having been traded, of course, in 84, after being here with the Oakland A's when he couldn't come to a contract agreement, and now traded right back the other way for virtually the same reason.
By the time Ricky gets traded back to Oakland, I'm going to show you what a championship player is all about. And what he did in Oakland in 89, between 89 and 91, is some of the greatest baseball that sport has ever seen.
You left New York. There are a lot of people upset back there. They didn't want you to leave, but are you happy to leave New York and come back to Oakland, or is it just part of the business?
It's really part of business, but I'm happy to come back to Oakland. I probably, if it was any team that I had to leave New York, I wanted to come back home, so I'm back home.
And so when Ricky gets to Oakland, he just went into supernova. And what he did to the Toronto Blue Jays in the 89 ALCS, just a one-man show.
This will get a run home, maybe more. Mosby going back, looking up, out of here, and into the black seats, the hitting background. There aren't many leadoff men who can launch one like that to dead center field.
He just destroys this team.
A drive to left. If it's high enough and fair, it's gone.
Yeah.
It qualified on both counts.
Can you imagine how many ways this guy can beat you? Game one and two, great speed, a record, and then he does this today.
My goodness, just the different ways that he destroyed that team. Runs, hits, stolen bases, intimidation. You couldn't stop him. Now, what Ricky did in 89 was remarkable, and he was the engine. But the things that people remember about that World Series, of course, the number one thing we all remember about the 89 World Series wasn't Ricky, it was the 89 quake. It was the Loma Prieta earthquake, which marred the series and postponed it for 10 days. But it was a completion of a year that began with Ricky essentially on the trading block in New York, but ended with him being a champion.
It's a ground ball to the right side, speared by Phillips.
But then the next year, he wins the MVP, wins the AL MVP. And then the next year, he breaks the all-time stolen base record. So that period of 89 to 91 is really what turned him in to the championship-level, Hall of Fame-level player that he became. And then, of course, then you win the World Series again with the Blue Jays in 1993.
The idea that we're in 93 right now, and there's another decade, Howard, to go of Ricky Henderson in the majors. And then after that... After that is what?
The thing about Ricky, what I love about this, Ricky never actually retired. He never announced his retirement. He never physically, officially retired from Major League Baseball. And I remember walking up to him, I think in 2018 or 2020, and I said to him, you know, and he was 63 at the time, or 62. I said, you know, Ricky, you never actually retired. And he looked at me with a total straight face and said, I think I could help a club. I was like, you're 61 years old.
This was not like Ricky kind of like winking. This was Ricky being like...
he was saying with a straight face. And Pamela, his wife, who was phenomenal in this book, told me that they would be at home and Ricky would see some player get a contract. that he didn't think was necessarily a good player. And he's like, I could do that. He's like 57. He's like, I can still do this.
But Howard, he went to the minors, right? He went to the minors in order to prove the thing you're describing. He was playing for the Newark Bears, playing in the minors.
And the San Diego Surf Dogs.
Rickey Henderson, the all-time legend you've described, is slumming it in places that are beneath him in every sense. But why?
Because Rickey actually, at his core, loves to play baseball and loves to compete. And that to me is one of the great juxtapositions of this American original. The guy that people said didn't want to play, wanted to play forever.
So at the end here, Howard, as we look at this guy who wanted to play forever and tried to, right, playing in the minors until age 46, this guy who has this baseball reference page that is a truly unfathomable grid of history, when you look back at all of that in totality, what comes to mind?
The arc of the book is how this man sort of went from this incredibly disliked character for all of the reasons that we're talking about, and then sticking around and people going, you know what? We miss the hell out of him. And isn't that sort of how things work in our lives? And not only do we miss him, but boy, was he good. At some point, you do take that 30,000 foot view and you look back and you go, oh my goodness, right?
Yeah.
We're witnessing something amazing. And in real time, maybe we didn't really see it.
Howard Bryant, thank you for helping our club, Adios Viet Daily.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.